From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 55 with guest Todd LaMote. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. Richard, how are you today?
I am well, sir, and prepping like mad for all of the conferences coming up in the spring. It's amazing how much work it is.
The season is upon us.
Well, in the 2 weeks of Tech Ed opens up a whole bunch more work for you and me, too, buddy. We got a week's worth of panels and things to do on the IT week, so that's going to be a lot of work.
Yeah, you look at the Microsoft conference calendar, which is what drives a lot of what we're talking about, and it's really back-to-back with the exception of kind of a month off in the middle of the summer is what it looks like.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
And I know you're going to be running around to some of the foreign tech heads that I'm not going to be able to make it to.
Should be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to the opportunities and seeing what, you know, what they offer and meeting some people.
Great. Let me read you an email. We've heard from Stephen Morawski before, actually. The email goes, "Hey, guys, I'm listening to the start of show 52, and you asked for feedback on clustering show topics. I do appreciate a block of shows on one topic because one can hear the differing viewpoints or different approaches or complementary solutions on a topic that is fresh in mind. I was really happy to see the show on Hyper-V because I'd like to use it and in a tested development environment. I'm going to get back to listening now. Thanks for the great content. P.S. I'm also a PowerShell fanatic, so more content on that topic would always be appreciated." And that's from Stephen Morawski, the host of PowerShell Basics.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen.
At PowerShell-Basics.com. And he also does his own podcast called Mind of Root at MindOfRoot.com. Great name, Stephen. I love it.
Very cool.
All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Todd LaMote is a systems administrator for the County of Lenox and Addington Information Services Department, supporting their libraries and museums throughout their 12 points of service. He also provides support for the Leeds and Grenfell and Prince Edward County public libraries, as well as the other departments within the County of Lenox and Addington. He's a member of the Ottawa Windows Server User Group and its associated certification study group, member of the board of the newly formed SQL Pass Ottawa chapter, and is also a Microsoft certified systems administrator and certified trainer. He started using Windows Steady State in the County of Lenox and Addington's libraries when the program was in version 1.1 and called the Microsoft Shared Computer Toolkit. He's also part of the closed beta team for version 2 and is now working with 2.5. Todd, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Todd.
This is a very cool technology that I don't think gets enough airtime. I remembered the Shared Computer Toolkit. Is this really the product that's all about setting up a computer in sort of that kiosk mode so it always resets back to a state that the next person can use it in?
That is correct, yeah. That's exactly what it is.
So, and you're obviously working for the counties.
That's right.
And libraries. I mean, these are all sort of perfect public places. What's the application?
The application is desktop PCs. I run internet patron machines, so the general public will come in, present their library card, then sit down and use a computer. So the idea is we want the computers to be as stable and as reliable for the general public. We also want to make sure that any history that's on the computer when they're using it gets erased when they leave so that, you know, the next person coming along doesn't see what the person before them maybe was doing. And also I'm trying to make it so that for myself, it's not a terrible administrative overhead having to run around and keep these machines running all the time.
Well, and I got to think that people hate having new technology plugged into a place like a library that's never working.
That's right. That's right. And you want to make sure that, you know, things are working and working well, because with our library system, it's county run within the county itself, so it's the politicians are the ones who kind of, instead of a board of directors, you'd have a lot of public libraries being government-run, county-run. It's the county councilors that are responsible for kind of running as a board. So when things don't work right, people go to their mayor or their counselor and say, hey, this isn't working, and I hear it.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah.
What are some of the classic problems, the real big problems that you run across when you're trying to do shared computing systems?
People like to install things on their machine. So, for example, they might want a different technology that I may not be running on there. So they try all kinds of, install all kinds of different things. That's one thing. Another thing is they like to share it. They change the backgrounds. They like to change different things on the machine so that it may not be the most appropriate for next person coming along. So that's generally the biggest things that I usually have with the machines, and just keeping them running. But that's, machines now are pretty reliable, so that's usually not a big issue.
So steady state, you know, Microsoft's steady state, I guess they're calling it now, but are there also security issues that it helps to deal with? And maybe you could touch on that.
Yeah, there is. I mean, with the steady state program, there's it's basically two portions to it, especially with 2.5, which is still in beta, by the way. I should have mentioned that earlier, that the 2.5 version, which is newly released, but it's in beta right now. So 2.0 is the current version. 2.5 is the beta, which is compatible with Windows Vista. So that's the one I'm really using right now in some of my libraries. And what they've done is gave us a group policy template so that you can use group policy to pretty much lock the machines down within a domain. And then there's also the disk protection side, which is really where the changes and the change protection happens. So when you turn on the disk protection, that will basically erase or whatever you decide to do with the changes to the hard drive. So you can turn on the disk protection and say, okay, I want all changes to the machines erased. So as you go on and do stuff, you can do whatever you want pretty much to the machine, turn the thing off, turn it back on, and it's back to the way it was when you turn the disk protection on. So, and then on the security side, it's the group policy settings, or you can go in and edit a profile and check off the things that you don't want people doing. For example, prevent access to control panels, change the start bar to the classic start bar, prevent users from seeing the all users programs. So you may want to limit what programs they can run. You can also decide which programs are allowed to run and which ones aren't allowed to run. Again, a lot of it was originally came from the GPO stuff. They brought it in and made it easy for librarians and non-technical people to be able to install it and run it.
I got to think that in a kiosk setting, you basically want to turn off all of that stuff, right?
Pretty much.
No desktop changes, no installing programs. Make all of that go away.
That's right. I mean, you pretty much want to limit what can run.
Right.
In a kiosk where you may want one or two things running, you may just want the Internet up, Internet Explorer, and you might have actually limited Internet access on the machine, which you can do with a steady state. You can say this machine is only allowed to visit these websites.
So really lock, and I'm thinking, as soon as you have Internet Explorer in the loop, so much for all of your protection. There's just so much that's out on the Internet.
That's right.
It's going to be very challenging to keep it, let's say, library appropriate.
That's right. So you can really limit what where people are going. I mean, for example, in our library system, we actually don't block, prevent people from going to certain websites that may be deemed inappropriate by, you know, like school standards. The only reason is being a library, it's kind of a fine line.
Yeah.
As to what censorship, you know. So
it is a balancing act of being able to do research versus staying content appropriate for your environment.
That's right.
But the biggest thing here is when that adult walks away from that machine and the kid walks up to it, that all of the stuff that the adult left behind is gone.
That's right. That's right. You reboot the machine, disk protection kicks in and erases the changes. You can also have steady state also has the settings in there for Internet Explorer. So when the person closes Internet Explorer, all the history is gone.
Everything's just
wiped
out.
It deletes the cache. So that helps as well.
If I run by the library and want to jump onto my online banking site, I'd like to be able to rest assured that the history is gone.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you want people to have some sort of, but you want them to have a, the knowledge or the security to know that machine's being protected or has there some sort of guarantees that their privacy is being protected and they're not going to have to worry about, stuff, next person coming along and seeing what the person did and all their information and all the things they've just did being out there for somebody to see.
So it is a big privacy element as well.
That's right.
Am I reading this correctly? This is free software. You just download it from Microsoft.
You need to. It's free software from Microsoft, provided you're running a genuine copy of Windows.
Right. So
which
you pay.
Everybody is anyway.
You pay for your Windows, and the rest is. And this is free.
That's right.
It'll do the Windows Genuine Advantage check for you, and then as long as that passes, then it'll let you install it.
That's right. That's right. And Windows. It runs on Windows XP, and the new 2.5 beta runs on Windows Vista, and it runs very well. The new 2.5 is very, very good so far.
Well, and it's still quite a young product, you know.
It is.
To be that low down on the version numbers is pretty impressive. It doesn't look like, is the beta freely available yet?
I'm not 100% sure. I've seen it on the TechNet forums.
Right.
And in the community site. If you go to www.microsoft.com, put steady state in the search in the upper right-hand corner off the homepage. The first hit that comes back is the steady state steady state page for the product, and go to the support and look for the community.
Oh, yeah. There's the steady state beta. So it's on the public side. I mean, obviously, for folks who are listening, probably have a TechNet subscription, so certainly it's available there. But it looks like they published back in November 2007 a 2.5 beta, so that's pretty much open to anybody.
That's right. And I mean, the product worked very, very good on Vista. I just had the opportunity to open a new library on March 29th in Yarker, and as part of the launch, or part of the opening, we decided that we were going to do Windows Vista on the machines because we wanted to make sure that people were seeing that they were getting the most modern, up-to-date library.
Nice.
As opposed to seeing, you know, Windows XP, which means still a great product, still works fine.
But it is 2001 technology.
That's right. I wanted people to say, hey, we're getting, you know, 2008, we're in 2008, we're getting 2008 technology.
Latest and greatest.
So, yeah, and it works fantastic.
Now, I mean, the kiosk, I think, is almost an extreme example of this, just about as locked down as you could get.
That's right.
Do you see this utilized at a lighter level? Could this actually be something we'd look at in a regular office setting?
You could. I mean, the school board has been kind of looking at it. Upper Canada District School Board, a friend of mine, David Myers, is a member of OWSUG, also the president of the SQL Ottawa SQL Pass chapter. And so we were talking about it. We travel back and forth every Monday to Ottawa for a certification study group, a little bit something a little bit different. But when we go back and forth, you know, I'm always talking about the stuff I'm doing at work. He talks about the stuff he's doing at work. And one of the things I was saying is, you know, you should be looking. Maybe you guys are using Deep Freeze right now.
Sure.
It's a bit of Microsoft. So I said, you know, for free, you guys could be using this. It might help as well with patch management stuff as well, because it has built-in stuff for doing patch management on machines. So we were talking a little bit about it, and yeah, you could really lighten it up. For myself, I've also done it in the libraries where they were running courses where basically I left the machine unlocked for the most part, just turned the disk protection on.
And then so the disk protection basically did the rollback on boot up?
That's right.
That's very clever.
So the machine is basically for the most part, the users can do just about anything you expect to do at home, but when the machine gets turned off, turned back on, it's back to the way it was when we started. Great for classroom environments.
Sure. I mean, give them the freedom to do what they want, but it's impossible to actually harm the system.
That's right.
You know, and this brings up an interesting angle on this, which is it's one thing to be operable and protect some privacy and get back to a clean state. I'm wondering how resistant it is to malicious intent to actually try and do it harm.
I'm not really sure. I haven't really had a chance to explore that side.
I've got to think that part of the protection is going to be if there is no disk drive and there is no CD-ROM and there is no USB, your challenge is getting things into the machine.
That's
in the
right.
First place. And then same thing with the internet side, is just don't allow stuff to be downloaded.
That's right. I mean, you can limit where programs can run from as well. So you can limit it to program files and the Windows directory.
So if
the programs aren't there, they can't run. So if someone comes in a memory stick, decides he's going to use a key cracking program and go from there with the USB stick, I can limit and say, okay, you know what? You can't run it off that memory stick.
Interesting. So I could still provide the USB key to allow someone to bring files in, say, for example, to print them
or to
make a copy of documents that they found via my kiosk machine, but I won't allow executables to run off of that.
That's right.
And I guess this is always the balancing act of I want to provide that capability for good intent, but still protect myself from bad intent.
That's right. I mean, for myself, I really need to provide the ability for people to come in and use a memory key and be able to bring their resume in or their homework and be able to sit down and do the work they need to do, save it, and then, or print it, save it and print it perhaps, and then go on from there. So I need the memory keys to be there and working. For myself, I try to limit what can rerun off the memory stick.
I can see where this could be useful for even for parents at home working with kids or well, there's a whole variety of internet cafes, different places where shared computers and all of the classic problems, the real expense or time, you know, the time suckage, if you will, of people using the same computers is that somebody breaks something and you have to spend a lot of time fixing it. So this really sounds like it can be a real money and time saver in that regard.
That's right. And it's also helpful if you have, you know, one of the things, if you have elderly parents who are using computers who aren't the most computer literate.
Sure.
They're installing stuff all the time on the machine, and you know, you're finding that you're constantly having to go support it all the time. Put this on there. It cleans the changes each time. Maybe set up a separate drive so they can store their files or My Documents. Gets redirected to the non-protected drive, but leave the operating system on the protected drive so that it's constantly being cleaned each time.
Gotcha.
Interesting model
cool.
to split it up like that. So yeah. How do updates work if every time you reboot it rolls back?
There's a Windows updates is one of the settings in the steady state console, and you click on the updates, you can set it up so that in the middle of the night or a specified time, the machine will reboot in an unprotected state, run the Windows updates, and then install them, and then reboots again in a back-end protected mode.
Cool. And if you want to go in and make alterations to the base configuration, what do you have to do?
If I make changes to the base configuration, I go in to the reboot the machine, turn off, basically, in disk protection, change it to save the changes on reboot.
Okay, so how are you able to do that and they're not? Is it just a password?
It's it needs administrator rights to open.
Right.
And that was really the main thing was administrator rights.
So when the machine comes up and you boot, because you're booting to an administrative account, it basically doesn't start steady state?
That's right. It starts it, but it doesn't. None of the group policy settings get applied.
Oh, okay. And the disk protection is turned off. So now you could install a new application or...
Actually, disk protection is turned on.
Oh, okay.
So disk protection is running. I have to go and say, okay, I've done my changes. Please save these changes on next reboot. With 2.5, I'm using mainly 1.1 and 2.5 beta. I do have one machine running 2.0, but I haven't really sat down and really worked with it that much. Once 2.5 beta came out, I started working with that and found it a lot nicer and easier to work with than 2.0. So with 2.5 beta, on the Vista, for example, you click reboot. It comes up and says, hey, you're running steady state. You reboot, you're going to lose all your changes. Do you want to do this or do you want to cancel and have to change a different option? So I click cancel, and then it says, you know, reboot, discard the changes, reboot, save changes.
Right.
Click that one. And reboot, save the changes I just did, and away you go. So it's important to make sure before you get on that machine to make any administrative stuff to it, reboot it first. So that anybody who's on there before you, the changes are gone.
Right, yeah, you've got to get down to a clean state before you get started.
So what operating systems is applied to? You've talked about Vista, but under Windows XP, what about the different editions? Can I run this at home? Is this only in the office, or what are the capabilities there?
With version 2... on Windows XP, you need Surface Pack 2, but you can run it on Windows XP Pro, Home Edition, or Tablet PC Edition. So it runs on the three versions that are out there. I believe it's just a 32-bit program, though. I don't believe it runs on 64-bit.
Gotcha. And what are we talking about with Windows Vista, then?
Windows Vista, on Windows Vista, it runs on Business, for sure, Ultimate.
Almost certainly.
Home Premium. I'm uncertain whether or not it runs on Home.
Oh, I got the list here.
Oh, you do?
Found it. Vista Business, Home Basic, Vista Starter, Ultimate, Enterprise, Home Premium.
Well, that's pretty much everything.
So basically all the different flavors.
Yeah, the whole
Starter
gambit.
To Ultimate.
Starter, I'm surprised with Starter.
Yeah, that's kind of shocking to me too. And of course, all the Vista editions pretty much come with tablet. I've just suddenly occurred to me this would be a cool product in its tablet environment, just being able to roll back and people using tablets in a variety of spaces.
The other thing that occurred to me that I'm curious about is you know, we talk on this show to a wide variety of different users and administrators, from enterprise all the way down to people that are just doing stuff at home and everything in between. You know, in the enterprise, typically you're running an Active Directory and group policy, and you've mentioned, you know, group policy templates and stuff. Is that a requirement, or can I do this on standalone computers, or what if I run a small office and I just have a work group?
You can do it on standalone machines in a work group environment. That's how I got started out. With version 1.1, for example, I installed it. None of my networks a year ago were on a domain. There was no domain environment at all. Each library was on its own work group, independent of one another, with no settings between them. So when I started off there, I created, basically installed it on the machine in the workgroup environment, created a local profile, a local account for the patron, logged in, did the profile, and then in the shared computer toolkit, edited the profile and locked down the profile so that changes can be made to it. Version 2.0, 2.5 has the same features there. But in 2.0, with the one machine I do have out there, what I did there was a first for me. Was I went into group policy, created a template for the patron account, created the main patron account, went into the GPO, adjusted the settings that I thought kind of matched what I saw in steady state, and then turned the disk protection on, just using steady state for just the disk protection. And that worked fantastic. There's a couple things that I would have liked to be able to do a little bit differently, but everything was working pretty good. And then when 2.5 came out and they came out with the templates, it made it so much easier. But you can run it in a workgroup environment, no problems. A standalone machine, no problems. Again, it's important to make sure you lock your settings. If you're going to use local GPO to make any changes, make sure you're doing it on the user and not the computer side. Because as an administrator, you want to be able to log in and do stuff without having those settings kicking in.
So would we still be encountering login screens as patrons, or does it just automatically log in with that sort of guest account?
It depends on how you do that.
So you do have the option to have the regular patron login, or it's just a default, it's already logged in kind of thing? Or
That's
click
right. With XP, I'm actually default logging the machines in. I'm going into the user control panel settings and editing it so that there's automatic login going on.
Oh, okay.
That's with the in the domain with the version 2.0. On version 1.1, all those machines are running in a workgroup environment. And that's mainly almost all my branches right now, with the exception of Yarker, that the new branch where I have this workgroup environment going. And they have come up with the old-style splash screen. You know, here's the users that you can log in as, which one you want to use. Some of them have just the patron account. Some of them have a student account with a password, and the other account being on that machine as a patron with no password. So that has been, the no password thing has been kind of a challenge for me, because in a domain environment, you would normally have passwords on your accounts. You want to have passwords. With the patron accounts, I really didn't want a password because I want to make it as simple and easy for people logging in. So that's one of the things I've done recently, is upgraded my domain to 2008 so that I can, for Yarker, have accounts with no passwords, but I can have all, make sure and enforce in the domain itself for any of the other accounts a password policy.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting conflict of, in that scenario, I don't want a password, but everywhere else I want, even on that machine, you'd want those real accounts to have properly rules-based passwords.
That's right.
So, and I guess 2008, we're now able to do that.
That's right. It's one of the new Active Directory changes.
So that actually I can specify, for this account, I am allowed to break this rule.
That's right. Yeah, it takes some work, and you got to use ADSI Edit to make some changes. You create a group, make the password policy changes to the group, and then apply that group to the user account.
And I've got to think, with those auto logon machines, then when you want to apply something, you restart it just to make sure that it's clean.
That's right.
Then you log off, log in your account. I mean, it's a few hoops for you to jump through in a
That's
scenario
right.
like that.
A few hoops for me. It's definitely a lot better for me to have to jump through them than having to make Joe Blow Public come in and have to do it.
And type any of those things. They just
want
to get going. Now, in your library scenario, it sounds like it's primarily internet connection. Do you provide specific applications as well?
Yeah, I do have Microsoft Office on a few of the machines. Adobe Acrobat's installed, or Adobe Acrobat Reader, I should say, is installed on some of those machines. OpenOffice, the Sun program, is used on a lot of the machines as well.
Just to be agnostic as far as file formats are concerned.
That's right.
Right.
I mean, Microsoft Office, there is a cost to it.
Sure, yeah.
Put it on all the machines. So we do have, I try to provide it on a few of the different machines, so people need that program, away they go. OpenOffice works for what a lot of people are doing, and, you know, being low cost, it definitely is better on the budget.
For sure. And I guess, yeah, it's a challenge to make the cost justified. What sort of hardware are you using for a kiosk environment like that?
I'm using Compaq Desk Pros, 2.4 gigahertz machine.
I hope it's gigahertz.
Yeah, not megahertz, gigahertz. Gigahertz computers, and the newer machines that I have are some Dell Optiplex, 745s and 755s that are like dual core 1.8s and 2.0s. Definitely nice machines.
Nice.
For the newer libraries, and we received a grant there back in the fall, and we've ordered 15 more machines to roll out. They're sitting in a stack somewhere in the Amherst View Library that are just waiting for me to come over and basically do the desktop deployment stuff to them, and away I go. One, that's what I was doing before Yark, was trying to make sure I had a good base image for these machines so that I didn't have to be doing each one custom.
Right.
But that gets into a whole different topic.
What was your life like when it comes to maintaining all of this stuff before, you know, you had this really useful capability?
Before this, they were using Deep Freeze. So basically it meant when any major updates were coming out, it was jump in the car and go visit every library. There's 10 of them. There are 10 libraries. There's 10 libraries altogether. We have a headquarters. We have a museum that's next door to the headquarters building. And, so there's, the 12 points. And it was basically jump in the car and go visit every library and visit each machine. Sit down, log in, do the updates. Didn't turn Deep Freeze off, do the updates, turn the Deep Freeze back on, make sure everything was working, go sit down to the next computer, and keep doing that. It was pretty much a 2-3 day job of running around. I have about 80 workstations out there for patrons to use.
Have you done any estimates or figuring on how much time this is actually saving you?
I haven't really done that. I mean, I know prior to this, it was, like I say, a couple days worth of work going around. I was pretty lucky when I first started this job. I've been here since July of 2006. Rick had posted just prior to this about the steady state, or shared computer toolkit, about his child's school and using it there. Rick Klaus, if the people don't know, he's an IT evangelist in Canada.
Sure.
For the hardware side. I'm not sure if everybody knows or not. So, he had blogged about it on the Canadian IT Pro blog. And from there, I saw that and said, hey, wait, you guys are doing this? Well, hang on a sec. There's a better program out there that's going to make my life a whole lot easier. So pretty much from day one, I got in, and it just happened when I started. About 2 weeks in, we ordered 30 brand new machines to be deployed to the libraries. So as I was doing that, I just went, as the machines were going out, they were going out there with the toolkit on there. So I don't really have a good estimate of what they were doing before. But from what some people who were doing it before said, yeah, it basically meant that we had to drive around and visit each library and do changes. For example, when the time changed, you had to go out, unfreeze the machines, and say, yep, accept the fact that the time has changed, and then and turn the freeze back on. Otherwise, it came up every time, and people would, you know, basically would see that every time, and the patrons, you know, they kind of like, well, why is this coming up? It's July. That was like May or March. Why am I seeing this?
Why is this still going on?
Sure.
That's right.
You know, I think some of these technologies, once they're available, they're real easy to take for granted because they just work. But if you think about the difference between what you're doing today and what everybody was doing on the systems prior to that, I mean, it's really a pretty substantial change.
It is. It's big time change. And one of the things, I mean, even as well as getting into doing deployments, desktop deployments, using a tool like Business, used to be Business Desktop Deployment, BDD, which is now Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. I'm using that, and that's making my life a whole lot easier. Instead of having to bring each machine up, install the software on each machine, install the steady state toolkit, do the lockdowns and log out, and then lock it down, which was typically, to do that is about 2 hours from start to finish.
Right.
I'm now plugging the machines into the network, saying, you know, go get the image from the deployment server. Boom, it's installed. About 20 minutes later, I have a machine up and going.
Yeah, that's terrific.
That's pretty substantial.
You're approaching this point where the library could almost plug it in and set it up.
That's right.
You can just go do something else.
Well, that's right. I mean, my time is very valuable. I'm the only IT professional in the department. Even though it's information services, the information services stands for libraries and museums. So right. I'm the only systems administrator, the only computer person in the department. So when something goes wrong with the computers, you know, I have to drop what I'm doing and go fix that, especially pager machines where it's frontline public service.
Right.
That's, you know, number one. People see that. And when things aren't working, they see that.
Well, Todd, I think we're running about the end of the show. Anything we've missed? Something we should call out to? You want to say hi, Mom?
Not really. I just was very, very glad you guys asked me to talk to you. I really enjoyed talking about this topic.
It's a great technology, and I think not enough people know about it.
It's an awesome tool, and it's something that I think, you know, school boards and different places could use. I did a presentation in Ottawa back in February, and I had the network administrator for CHEO in Ottawa, which is the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario, come to me and ask me about the technology, because he was looking for something where he could have the machines reboot and go back to a base state, because in their hospital, they have doctors that use radiology-type tools, and they need, a lot of times the machines aren't working right, and if they can go, say, tell the, you know, frontline support, their first answer is, okay, reboot the machine, it'll go back to a clean state, see if that fixes your problem.
Right.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, no, huge step forward, and a great scenario for a product like this.
That's right.
Anytime we've got a computer that is not for a specific person, it makes a lot of sense to consider steady state.
That's right.
Todd Lamont, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Todd.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.